Testing, 1, 2, 3. This is Catherine Chilcote interviewing Rick Alexander on July 28th, 2013 at Mrs. Chilcote's home at Lion's Head in Salisbury. All right, Rick, let's get the details. Your name, your date of birth, where you were born, those things.
Those things. I'm Richard William Alexander Jr., not to be confused with senior. I was born in Camden, New Jersey on September 18th, 1951.
When did you and your family come to Salisbury? Actually, probably Lakeville.
It was Lakeville, but Lakeville's part of Salisbury. It was 1964 or 5, and Lakeville, Salisbury or Lakeville, were chosen as a result of Dad's business. He was a sales rep for a prefab manufacturing company called Hodgson Holmes, and Salisbury happened to be the center of his territory. Simple as that, just geography.
So you were how old when you came?
How old was I? I entered seventh grade here. That would make me 12.
Okay, so you went to Salisbury Central.
I did.
And then to Housatonic.
I did.
Now, when you were at Salisbury Central, your mother taught at Salisbury Central.
Yes. I didn't have a great deal to do with Mom being there. It was my brother who actually got Mom as a teacher.
Oh.
Mom was in the other building from me the whole time I was at Salisbury Central.
What grade was your mother teaching in
there? Oh, I don't know. It was a low grade at the time.
And
she spent 2 years teaching low grades, then moved to the junior high.
Cut
loose and got out of there. So no, I Mom being teaching at the grammar school I went to didn't have an impact on me. Well, yeah, it did. Yeah, it did. Everybody knew who I was by virtue of being Doris's son. Much like Molly Kelly's daughter. She was kind of, I don't even remember her name, but everyone knew her,
mm-hmm.
knew her on site.
Yeah.
That's Molly Kelly's daughter.
So tell me a little something, as you say, you were in seventh grade, so you were a teenager when you came to Salisbury.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the things that occupied your time when you weren't in school? And who were your friends?
Oh, at the time, I was hanging out with the Carancy boys, Norma Carancy. She was at Hotchkiss, and they lived there on campus. Ricky McHugh spent a great deal of time down there in the swamp where the sewer system now is, out behind Dr. Grendon's house. I knew every inch of that swamp. Oh, of course, there was the Grove all summer. I would just spend all summer at the Grove. I was on the swim team and the likes.
All right. Tell us a little something about the swim team. Who was the coach? Was it Art?
I don't recall. I think Mr. Hemmerly?
Ah.
It may have been before art. My real memories are Jeanette Axelby and taking the life-saving course and swimming around the lake with her and learning all the boating safety from her. That's okay. my memory.
All right.
But it was his name Don Hemmerly?
What?
Don Hemmerly. Was he the man who preceded Art Wilkinson?
Yes.
Yes.
Wilbert Hemmerly.
Wilbert? I'm not sure I ever knew his first name. It was Mr. Hemmerly.
Tell us a little something about Jeanette Axelby. Was she at the bank? Do I remember that?
Oh, you probably do. I don't.
Okay.
No. My association with her had to do with her time at the lake. I never associated with her otherwise. I'm not sure I ever knew what she did for a living.
Okay.
I was impressed by her desire, her really deep felt desire to go swimming because of this polio link that she had. And I didn't know anything about polio at the time, but it was impressive to me that she would do all that.
Were you involved in SWASA?
I was. I skied cross country. I have jumped on the jumps, but it was not my thing. No, I was a cross country skier.
Oh.
And I went to all the meets and you know, I was driven up to Lake Placid all the time and Bear Mountain and everywhere there was a jumping meet.
Now, who were some of the people involved in SWASA in those days? Joanne Moore, or Joanne Erickson, the Whitbecks. I mean, who do you remember?
I remember the Whitbecks. And this is probably a later memory, but I remember Art Wilkinson was involved, and George Kiefer, and all, you know, Matt, Kitty, who else? Gosh, there were a lot of people involved. I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank. Mm. This getting old stuff, you know.
Now, you were in the service. Did you go in right out of high school?
I did not. I went to Waterbury State Technical College to learn mechanical drafting. This is something I thought I wanted to do. But frankly, I was not an academic person. And within a year, I was done with that. I was working at Gear as an orderly for Mary Salisbury.
For what?
Mary Salisbury. Do you remember her?
No.
She was, I think, from Canaan or Sheffield. But Mary Salisbury taught me a great many things that I continue to use. If you're going to the other end of the house and you need to get something, on your way, be thinking about what else you need to bring back. I mean, those little shortcuts in life. She was the one who taught me all those things. And then one day, Mom asked me if I had ever considered going in the service, and I hadn't, but it dawned on me at that time that I wasn't going to be an orderly the rest of my life. I looked into the services, and I went in the Navy primarily because their food was better.
Because of what?
Their food. A Navy man eats better than an Army man. Air Force, I wasn't into flying, but you know, taking a ride on a big ship was intriguing to me, and I did. I spent 4 years. I even considered re-upping and staying. And today, I regret not having stayed.
Now, what did you do in the service?
I was a hospital corpsman. I worked in the intensive care unit at Chelsea Naval Hospital in Boston for 2 years. And then I worked on a ship out of Norfolk doing tours to the Mediterranean for the other 2 years. and it was myself and another man who ran the sick bay. We were on an oiler. There was a complement of only 300 enlisted officers. So there were only two of us. But because we, because of my rate, I had to also stand shore patrol duty. I got to see the ports the way the normal seaman didn't get to. Part of my responsibility was to go rent a car at the port, go get a hotel room, deliver the car to the pier when the Liberty boats came in so that the officers could use it all night. And at midnight when the officers went back, I took the car back to the hotel. In the morning, I had to go to the airport and get the mail and then start my day. But I had the car all day to myself. It was terrific duty.
So you never got overseas?
Oh, yes. This was all through the Mediterranean.
Oh,
all right.
All
over North
okay.
and South Mediterranean.
Okay.
East and West, the whole. I even got to Guantanamo. And I got to go diving in Guantanamo. That water is so crystal clear, you can see 100 feet underwater. It's amazing.
When you got out of the service, did you come back to Salisbury?
Well, yes. By that time, I was already married. I married Merle Sherwood, Roy Sherwood's eldest daughter. Came back to Salisbury, and I worked in the respiratory therapy department at Fairview Hospital for a number of years. Again, I realized that that was going nowhere. And I did have an opportunity. Bill Myskins had called me and said, "Hey, we're moving our office. Would you care to come help?" "Why, sure, Bill. I'd be happy to help." When we got done moving all of the office equipment into, and this was the second floor of the building that Robin Leach is in, Roba Leach was in, we lived next door, the Brown House, Dr. Brewer's offices.
Mm-hmm.
We moved into those office spaces upstairs. I wasn't part of the we at the time. But I took Bull by the horns and I went in to see Bill, and I said, "Bill, I need a job. Is there anything here that you think I can help you with?" And he hired me right then and there. And I spent, what was that, either 8 or 10 years with them doing their post-production work. I learned how to take motion pictures with film. And I traveled into Manhattan once a week to do post-production. I recorded the voiceovers and then assembled the video, you know, in different studios. That's what I did for MM&J.
All right. Well, explain a little bit about what MM&J is. Madison Myskins Jones.
Yes.
Now, what did they do? They filmed commercials.
They were advertising syndicators. We would travel to Arizona because it was a right to work state and you could count on the weather to film a commercial. The commercial was generic in nature. You could plug in a retailer's name. And there was a sales force headed by Harlan Schillinger, and they went all over the country in some international things and resold those commercials over and over again, once in each market. You could buy an exclusive use of a commercial in a market. Washington, D.C. That commercial would only ever be sold once. But then it would be sold again in Harrisburg. It would be sold again in St. Louis. It would be sold again in Miami. My job was to customize them for each of those locations. I had to write the script, or modify the script. The script was previously written. Modify the script to suit the client, photograph his artwork, and then assemble it and ship it off to the customer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. After you left them,
They left me.
They left you, but that was...
The company simply folded.
Yeah. That was what, in the 80s?
End of 87, early 88.
Okay.
They simply announced that this time next week we're done. Closing the doors. If I had my druthers, I'd still be doing that job today. But I didn't get my druthers. We rarely do we? I had nothing to do. By this point, we had children, we had a mortgage, and we had a life we had built, and you always live up to your means. We were, of course, living up to our means. I had to do something. I have a love of buildings. I love old buildings. That's part of why I guess I was trying to become a mechanical draftsman. But I've always been good with my hands, and wood works well with me. So old buildings talk to me. I have an affinity for wood. I started restoring homes. Started, of course, with small projects. You have to get your feet wet and learn how to do it and get people interested in you, which did happen, and I didn't have need to advertise ever. All of my work came to me by word of mouth. I think because I was good at it, or people really, really liked me. That first year was rough. Our income for the year was half what it had been the previous year with MMJ. By the third year of that, I was back up to my income level, and it continued to grow. And I did that from, as I say, the end of 87, 88, until I gave it up in 2008. In January of 2008 is when I moved to Florida. My folks are at that point where they need hand-holding. I went to Hold Hands.
Okay. Go back a little bit. Tell me some of the places that you remember as a teenager. When you first came to town, everything from the milk bar to the movie theater, just sort of do a little reminiscence about.
Sure, you mentioned the movie theater. I do remember seeing the movie theater, and I do remember that next door was Lou Barbieri's produce store. I have in my mind's eye a picture of the train trestle. Is it real or was it planted? Was it something I wished I'd remembered? I don't know. It's so nebulous that I can't call it a firm memory. But I do remember all that block of buildings across there, where the 2-4 garage was, where the luncheonette was, the
Barnett's.
5 and 10
Barnett's.
I remember those. The grocery store across the street with which Bill Jenks had run for a while. What else? Frank Bogue's gas station.
Okay.
You remember Frank Bogue?
Yeah.
Frank Bogue's gas station.
The apothecary shop.
The apothecary shop and May Bissell. Across the street was, of course, the Methodist Church and help me with his name, Jerry Pollock. Jerry Pollock and his kids were of course, right across the street. We were in the Brown House. I remember. I was always an outdoors kid. I was up playing in the Porter, which of course the Porter's private property, so we weren't supposed to be there, but we did enjoy it immensely. My brother Mark was friends with the doctor up the other across Burton Brook and across Main Street.
Gallup?
No.
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 A doctor?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it may come to me.
Yeah.
And the Reed boys. We hung out with the Reed boys some.
Campbell twins?
No, I never spent much time with them. They're younger than I am, aren't they?
What?
They're younger than I am, I believe.
Could be.
But the Gentiles, I remember the Gentiles. At the time, the Holly Block was still standing. The Carancies had, Norma had retired from Hotchkiss School. And she moved, she and her boys, into the Holly Block. And I remember we scoured that building before it came down. We really knew every nook and cranny of that old place.
Now, I know that your folks bought a place up in Pine Grove.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us something about Pine Grove.
Well, Pine Grove is a lovely place. And its security is rooted in the fact that no one knows it's there. Pine Grove, Mom and Dad had bought the house in Salisbury that they called Yesterday's Yankee. It was next to the cemetery on Route 44. And no, actually, they rehabbed that house. I did a lot of that with my dad. And when they sold that house, the proceeds of that were sufficient for them to buy a house outright in Florida and a house in Pine Grove outright, which allowed them then to bank the remainder, and that's what they're living on today. The house in Pine Grove was in sorry shape when Mom and Dad bought it. And it was my brother Mark and I and Mom and Dad rehabbed that house. Brother Mark is still living in it. I spent time on the board of directors of Pine Grove because I had done a great deal of work in there. I like to say that had I stayed in business for a couple, three more years, I would have put a roof on every building in there.
Well, now, tell us what Pine Grove was for those people who don't know.
Oh, I do know the history of Pine Grove. Yes, I do. It was a Methodist camp community, and it started with just tents in the dirt in this cathedral pine, if you would, area. And this was just post Civil War. They were using Army surplus tents. Those Army surplus tents were all the same size. They were all approximately 13 by 26. As a consequence, all the houses in there, the base footprint is 13 by 26. Because what happened was families would come and spend the summer there, and Dad would ride the train down to New Haven and into the city or wherever to go to work during the week, ride the train back. There was a train station at what is now the defunct mining operation just off Sand Road. There was a train station there. It was more than a whistle stop. But anyway, these tent platforms were built because Mama said, I don't want to live in the mud anymore. So they put their tents on the tent platforms. And as the tents aged and rotted from the bottom up, the houses grew from the bottom up. And the Victorian bric-a-brac and color and the fretworks were all Sears Roebuck.
Oh.
They were all mail order Sears Roebuck. You can find every one of those patterns in Sears Roebuck poetry.
Okay.
There was a hotel there. There was a oil house. There was a stable. Gosh, they even had jail. Because, of course, the Methodists were not drinkers. So anyone caught having imbibing at all had to spend the night in the hooskow. All those things are gone now. With the exception of remnants of the hotel, when the hotel was taken down, architectural elements, windows, stained glass windows, doors, etc., were all dispersed to each of these houses. And most all of those houses have an element of the original hotel in them, built into them.
Mm-hmm.
The philosophy of Pine Grove is interesting in that the trees have the right of way. Houses have to accommodate the growth of trees. So trees are very important in there. They're what Pine Grove is. Without them, it would be Plain Grove. There are houses there with pine trees that are 2.5-3 feet across, growing right up straight through the middle of the porch. And of course, the hole in the porch has to continue to grow larger as the tree does. Actually, there's one house in particular in there with that scenario that I personally enlarged the hole 3 times. Well, you enlarge the hole and then the tree grows and the wind blows and it starts knocking the porch off the house. 3 times I did that hole in that room, in that roof. Oh, it was a lovely place to work and I enjoyed the people. And I'm glad I still have an association in there.
Well, can you think of something we may not have touched on that has a fond memory or otherwise? Do you have any connection with Mount Riga or?
Oh, I know some folks with houses on Mount Riga, and I've spent a bit of time up there, not a lot.
No.
My fondest memory of Mount Riga is before children, before my daughter Carrie was born, I had a large stable of motorcycles. I was into that, young men do. And I had some dirt bikes, and I used to love to ride all over Mount Riga. I could get to places where you would never walk, where people have never been. I had a fellow show me an original virgin piece of forest that had not come down during the Iron Age. I don't even remember who showed that to me. Beautiful piece of forest.
Well, I don't think I have any more questions. If you don't have anything in particular to add, I thank you very much for.
Well, you're very welcome. I hope it was sufficient. Catherine had instructed me to come back and add to this if something did occur to me, and it did occur to me that it was Dr. Noble and his sons, who my brother used to hang with. Doc Noble had that house at the bottom of the hill below Peck's house that keeps getting hit by cars as they go out of control down that hill. the Lloyds. Jeff Lloyd has made an entire career out of fixing that fence. And I remember the Pecks. We were close with all of the Pecks. And if anything else occurs to me, I'll certainly stop back here and add it.